Welcome, everyone, to Cocktails and Killers, episode six. Oh, I can't believe we already have six episodes.
I know, it's so exciting. I'm Lena.
I'm Heather.
And tonight we are going to be talking about Wesley Allen Dodd, the Vancouver child killer.
That sounds terrible.
Oh yeah, he's like the lowest fucking human probably. Well, maybe not the worst, but he's up there.
They're all pretty
If you listen to our last podcast about Israel Keyes, he was very planned out, very meticulous, very smart. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going the opposite end of the spectrum now.
This one was really sloppy.
He was like...
Or just...
Like, you're just going to be so mad when you hear all... Because I couldn't not do this one this week. Because I'm like, how the fuck? This should have never happened. So, here we go. Wesley Allen Dodd. He was born July 3rd, 1961 in Topanish, Washington. His parents were Jim and Carol, and he was the oldest of three children. He had a younger brother named Greg, and then the youngest was a sister named Catherine. Now, Dodd reports that he grew up in a loveless home. He never heard anyone tell him that they loved him. He says he was often overlooked or neglected, and that his parents paid more attention to his siblings. Everyone else in the family.
My parents don't love me. They love my sister more than me. Right. They love my brother
Poor
more
pitiful
than me.
Well, God. And everyone else in his family says this just simply isn't true. Now, by no means they said were they the Cleavers.
Right.
But it wasn't like the picture that he painted.
Of course.
His brother in interviews remembers, you know, Dodd being a happy child as a young, you know, younger child. His father says he remembers the same thing. You know, his brother remembers playing together because there was only about 18 months or less in between them. So they were pretty close in age.
Yeah.
His account of his childhood is by all means not accurate.
Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. In grade school, his family did start to notice that he didn't quite fit in with the other kids at school. He was very uncoordinated. He wasn't really good at sports, kind of a bookworm, very awkward, didn't have a lot of friends, and he got picked on a lot. His brother, even though he was younger than him, would often step in and try to protect him from the other kids that were bullying him at school. So, like I said, his parents did, you know, they did fight a lot. They had a very feudal relationship. They would often argue in front of the kids, and some of the fights did turn violent with his dad abusing his mom.
Now, he
never abused any of the kids, and that, you know, still shouldn't happen, but...
Right.
So that was probably the worst that they were exposed to. In junior high, when Dodd was about 13 is when people were like, okay, like
something's
not right here.
Something's a little off with this kid.
So what he would do after school, he would, this is so fucked up. he started exposing himself to children. But now listen to this, how fucking stupid he is. He would go in his bedroom window, pull back the curtains, wait for the little kids to get off the bus to pass by.
Pull his dick out,
all the while covering his face with the curtain like they don't know who lives there. Yes, I know. I'm just like, what? How? No, it just doesn't make any sense how anybody can be that fucking stupid. At this age, he claims he knew he was attracted to boys.
Oh, okay.
And even he says he can remember being 9 and having an attraction to boys. Now, he didn't say he was gay or bisexual or, I mean, he just says that he knew he had that, you know, attraction.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of to backtrack a little bit about him exposing his dick in his window. Finally, after doing this repeated times, a child reported it to their parents and the parents told the police.
Yeah.
Well, the police come to his house, but nothing was done. They just told his parents about it, basically.
And his hey, your son's been, you know, showing himself.
Whopping his willy out in front of kids. And, well, his parents.
We're not going to do anything. You guys can talk to him.
Yeah, they thought maybe it was a friend of his brother's that may have been doing it.
Huh.
You know, they were basically trying to, you know, make excuses, you know, for him. His dad, later in life, went on to say that, you know, he knew that really it was him deep down, but he didn't want to admit it at the time. So Dodd is quoted at this point in saying, this is when he decided to take his show on the road.
Oh my God.
Probably not much of a show, I'm guessing, if you got to whip your dick out at everybody. So he then started to ride his bike around his neighborhood and the neighboring neighborhoods looking for young boys that were out playing. He would, you know, ride up. If he saw some kids out playing, he'd yell at them, pull his pants down, shake his dick at them, whatever. And then he would hop on his bike and ride off into the sunset.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This behavior continued for years with really nothing ever happening.
To him.
So in 1975, he got reported again. But, and the police, you know, knew of this other time, you know, the report was filed on him.
Yeah.
But all they did was recommend counseling.
I mean, this is,
I mean, I don't know what you can do.
Repeat behavior.
Well, yeah, but still, I feel like, I mean, it gets worse.
Oh, great.
So, at the age of 15, it was actually on his birthday, his mom and dad got into a huge fight. I mean, it was very violent. And his mom basically told the dad, pack your shit and go.
Yeah.
Well, his dad attempted suicide on his birthday.
Oh.
He obviously was not successful. And then they ended up divorcing a year later, in 1977. At this point, everyone has remembered Dodd. He becomes more withdrawn after this. And this is when his indecent exposure starts to escalate to molestation.
Oh.
His first victim, or victims, because it actually happened in the same day, was an 8-year-old cousin and her...
His cousin?
Mm-hmm, his own cousin.
Oh.
An 8-year-old cousin and her 6-year-old brother. So, on the same day.
Wow.
Yeah. It didn't come out until years later, so he went on molesting them.
Yeah.
As much as he could whenever they were around.
Jeez.
And then his dad was dating a girl that had a small child, and he molested that child as well, quite frequently.
Oh.
He would later report. He said, quote, exposing myself wasn't exciting anymore. I wanted to touch and be touched.
Ugh.
So it starts from waving his willy to...
Yeah, then it's like kind of like with the whole thing we talked about with Israel, you know, to... It just wasn't enough anymore. He needed a rush.
He did. Obviously, his family members weren't around all the time, and he said that he had these urges. It was like all the time, like he just couldn't control it. Like,
yikes.
So when he didn't have family members around to molest, he started gaining the trust of neighbors and offering to babysit their kids. They didn't have any reason to suspect anything.
Did they not know I guess they probably didn't know about him flashing.
Right. That was never, like, made public or anything.
Probably because he was a minor still.
And his family's not going to just, like, put
go
that
everybody
out there.
And be like, yeah, my son, yeah. You know, he likes to go around and flash
so
people.
He would, you know, babysit for these kids. And at first, he says that he would wait until they were asleep. And then he would, like, touch them and, you know, do whatever kind of fucked up shit that he did to them. And then he got a job working as a camp counselor during the summer months.
Oh.
Basically taking full advantage of these kids who trusted him, you know.
Oh, my God.
So now he kind of escalates to more than just like when they're asleep with like strangers. So he started this like trying to coax the kids, like, you know, oh, let's, I dare you to do this, or oh, let's go skinny dip and it's fun. And, you know, he said that he would tell the kids, oh, well, I've got a fun game we can play, and I've played this with other kids, and they really, really liked it, and you will too.
Trying to, like, talk them into going along with
what he wants. Yes, I mean, and using that child mentality of, like, curiosity and, you know, but, I mean, most kids are pretty trusting, too.
Yeah.
So, especially if this person is an authoritarian figure as a camp counselor. So, I mean, he knew that. And that's probably literally the only reason he took, you know, took the job.
Oh, no doubt.
Was to do that.
100%.
And he said that sometimes he would say, well, if you do this, then I'll give you a, quote, grown-up treat. So he tried to make it seem like, oh, this is something cool that grown-ups do. And, you know, like,
if I do it, then, you know, they're going to give me a grown-up treat.
Right,
which, you know,
exactly.
must mean.
It's something cool.
Yeah.
So, in high school, he was caught again for indecent exposure for an act of touching himself in front of a group of school children.
Oh, my God. Did anything happen?
Well, he was charged with communication with a minor for immoral purposes, but all the charges were dismissed. Don't know why.
That was going to be my next question, was why?
No. Don't know. So now this is at least three times, you know, that we know of by the age of 16.
That he's been caught for this.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And nothing has come from it.
No. And to me, I'm just like,
what the hell, Canada?
And why,
he was in Washington.
Yeah, Vancouver, Washington. Like, why his parents aren't taking some action, too? Like, it makes me angry at the parents, even.
I mean, were they just, like, in denial?
I don't know. I mean, I know they're divorced and they have other kids, but I would be like, look, we got to get my kids some fucking help.
Right.
Like, you know, so at this point, it's like, you're mad at the parents, you're mad at the authorities, because knowing where it escalates, it's just, it, all of this just could have been prevented.
Yeah.
So, the next year, this was, he was still in high school. So, this was at age of 16. He exposed himself to two girls in Richland, Washington, and was confronted by police. He even admitted to them that he was involved in at least, and at this point, he quotes, six other cases of this.
He admits this to the cops.
Tells the cops this. I've done this behavior before, you know, six other times, whatever. Oh, they just let him go because they said that he didn't touch anybody or do anything. So he just, that's
it. Oh my God. So this is, what are we up to? Four times that he's been caught?
Yeah, he says six. So there could be some that I didn't even like find on there because there are literally so many. Like, we would have spent probably 5 hours talking about all of this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I could have written probably 30
pages. He's obviously a repeat offender. He even admitted to being a repeat offender, and they still do nothing.
Yes. Exactly.
That is insane. I know he's not touching kids at this point, but that's still something you don't do, exposing yourself to children.
Right.
There should be repercussions for that.
There should be something, yes. So, it's at this age when he's like, without a doubt, like, I'm gay. I only want boys.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, he goes on and he will molest and touch other girls, too. But, so, he clearly has a lot of issues at play here, you know. In 1979, at the age of 18, he does actually graduate from high school. He graduated from Columbia High School in Richland, Washington. And he takes a job as a, like, stock boy in a local grocery store.
Yeah.
So, we're going to fast forward to August of 1981. He's 20 at this point. And he tries to abduct two girls at the same time. Probably not very smart. Obviously, no. He failed. And they reported him. But no action was taken against him.
Shocking.
So at this point, he's like, oh, okay, maybe I need to get out of town, or, you know, like, I need a change of scenery. So the next month, he enlists in the Navy.
What is it with these guys?
I know. What is that? In some sort of service. I don't understand. Obviously, it doesn't do shit for him. So he's assigned to a submarine base in Bangor, Washington. He just starts preying on the children on the base.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He's even said that he molested the kids of one of the captains on the base. He, at this point, started using money to bribe kids into doing what he wanted.
And to probably stay quiet about it.
At one point, he offers a group of boys $50 to go play strip poker in a motel somewhere. Oh. Well, they obviously don't go, and they report it to police.
Yeah.
So he was arrested. He admitted to the police, yes, this happened. And yes, I was planning on molesting them. Tells them that.
And they do nothing.
Nothing.
Jesus. How?
Nothing.
How? That makes absolutely no sense to me.
I don't understand it. I mean, I know this was a different... I mean, and it wasn't even that long ago, but still, it's like...
That is some of the shittiest cop work I've heard. I mean, like, and we've talked about that a little bit.
Yes.
You know, sometimes the authorities really drop the ball in some of the... And my God.
This is dropping the fucking bomb.
Yeah. I don't even know.
So during his time in the Navy, he starts frequenting like public places. He started going to theaters and arcades and would basically try to assault, accost children and, you know, boys in the bathrooms.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That last arrest, when nothing happened, when he tried to give the boys. So the Navy found out about it and they discharged him.
Well, he's lucky that somebody didn't kill his ass.
Right? Especially the captain that he molested their kids. So, he gets a job at a paper mill. And basically, this same pattern continues. Molest, get caught. He does eventually serve a little time, does a little counseling, and then he's back at it again. The longest he ever stayed in jail, I believe, was 6 months.
That's all.
That was the longest, with a year of probation. It's hard to even, like, talk about it because it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
He says, I knew it was wrong. It would stop for a while, but after a while, things start building up. Stress. Things on the job. Mm-hmm. Things not going good. And after a point, I couldn't really control myself anymore. So now, his sexual fantasies start to become more violent. Over the years of this repeat behavior.
Yeah.
I guess he probably gets tired of...
He needs something more.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. He has quoted as saying, the more I thought about it, the more exciting the idea of murder sounded. Oh. I planned many ways to kill a boy.
Oh.
He starts drawing and designing in a notebook. Tons of different torture devices. They later found these notebooks.
Like, what, he like made his own torture device? Oh my God.
Yeah, it started with drawings. At this point, his victim count of people he's molested is well over 40, he says.
It's terrible.
And, I mean, he's pretty much at this point feeling invincible. Because
yeah. Oh yeah. Because nothing's really happened to him at this
point. A
slap
on the wrist.
Yeah.
You know, here and there.
He can admit to it and nothing happens to him.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm. And his victims ranged in age of all the years from like 12 all the way down to two years old.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Boys,
poor kids,
girls, by all definitions, he was a sexual psychopath.
Yeah.
On the path to murder that could have been stopped years ago.
Yeah. Before he ever started to murder.
So September 4th, 1989.
Mm-hmm.
This is after he's already had his 40 victims of molestation and exposure and all that. He goes to Vancouver's David Douglas Park armed with a fish fillet knife and some shoelaces. He went knowing he was going to try to kill someone.
Yeah.
So he sees these two kids playing. They were two brothers, Cole and William Neer. They were ages 10 and 11. He coaxes them to come into the woods with him in a secluded area. they go. He never really said what he told them to get them to go with him, but they agreed to go into the woods with him. He forces them to undress and tie them to a tree and perform sex acts on both of them.
Oh, my.
He does recount a little bit of what happened, and the younger one, he was crying, and Dodd got really upset by that, and so he did what he did, and then he stabbed them both to death.
Oh, my God.
Repeatedly, and he fled after that. Cole...
He just, like, left the bodies?
Left the bodies, yep. Cole actually died on the scene, and William died on the way to the hospital. Someone did come and find their bodies, but Cole was already dead, and William died on the way to the hospital.
Mm.
So, yeah, he just left them there and just dipped out. So, Dodd says that he was very frustrated by this, by the kid crying, and he felt like that it messed up everything that he had planned. Yes, he was angry.
Like Israel getting pissed at the courier guy.
Yeah, except this guy's just a fucking moron.
Well.
he said he was angry he didn't get to do all the things that he had fantasized about doing. Mm-hmm. He wrote in his, you know, diaries that he wanted to eventually bring them back to his house because then he would have all kinds of time to rape them and do whatever he wanted, and it just didn't happen that way. And so he was very upset about it. He decided right then and there, I'm going to kill again. Like, I have to, because I didn't get
to carry out the plan he had.
He didn't get the thrill or whatever, you know. He just wasn't satisfied.
He had to do it. It was too hastily done.
Yep. In addition to his journal and his little notebook with the torture devices, he now starts keeping a scrapbook of the newspaper clippings and everything about the murders that he can find.
Mm.
Because I guess it just makes him feel big and makes
him feel good. Yeah, that's probably kind of his way of keeping trophies.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Mm-hmm. He starts fantasizing about, quote, surgeries with young boys.
Surgery.
Yeah, like, he even talks about wanting to eat their genitals. This is all in his notebook. I mean, and there's much more that I didn't even, like, feel like that I could even, like, talk about because it was just so
disgusting.
Grotesque. He talks about how he wants to castrate the boys but keep them from dying so that he can serve them their own genitals as well.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Telling you,
we say
everyone is fucked up, but he's really fucked up.
Like, he's probably one of the worst human beings to ever exist.
Literally, yes. On October 29th, so that's, what, roughly a month later? Almost 2 months later.
Yeah.
He drives to Portland, Oregon, and goes to a local park. He sees a 4-year-old boy, Lee Iselli, and his 9-year-old brother, Justin. Lee was playing on the slide alone by himself. Dodd coaxes him to come with him.
Mm-hmm.
He promises, oh, let me take you home. You know, I think your brother already left. And, well, the little boy's like, okay, you know, I mean, he's 4. So
yeah, he doesn't know better.
He doesn't know any better. Well, he takes Lee to his apartment. And, you know, he gives him a toy to play with. He sits down. He writes in his journal talking about how the kid has no idea what's coming and all the stuff he wants to do to him. It's disgusting.
So sick.
After he lets him play for a little while and makes him feel comfortable, you know, he takes him to his bedroom and orders him to undress. He ties him to the bed and molests him multiple times, stopping in the middle to take photos. And then detailing it in his journal about everything that he has done. He keeps him there overnight. And the next morning, he decides he's just going to go ahead and kill him. So he strangled him with a rope and hung his body in the closet to keep as a trophy.
Oh, my God. How long did he keep the body
Well,
there?
He realizes, okay, I have a landlady. This probably isn't going to work.
Right.
So, he takes Lee's body and he dumps it in a bush just right off of a path near Vancouver Lake where anybody could have seen it.
Yeah.
He took all of his clothes off of him and burned those in a barrel in his backyard. The only thing he kept was little Lee's Ghostbuster underwear.
Oh.
And he kept them in a suitcase under his bed for himself.
Disgusting. Just,
yeah. The photos that he took were found in a photo album labeled Family Memories. So he was going to start this photo album of all these boys.
Yeah.
Family Memories.
You
don't even have words.
I don't.
That's how I felt when I was reading all this. The same. As soon as this attack's over and he dumps the body, immediately, he's planning his next one. So this is going to be victim number four, incident. In his journals, he calls them incidents. Incident number three. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he starts planning his next attack, and he actually started actual construction on one of his torture devices that he had been journaling about.
Oh my God.
It's like he's a fucking moron, but yet he starts construction on a fucking torture device.
Right.
It's like his smart is for, like, to be a killer.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I can't even put together something with fucking instructions, let alone
build a torture device that I just thought up in my mind.
Yeah.
And drew it out in a journal.
He writes in his journal, they find, and he's talking about this victim number four, incident number three.
Mm-hmm.
He says, incident three will die maybe this way. He'll be tied down as Lee was. But instead of placing a bag over his head like I had previously planned, I'll tape his mouth shut with duct tape. When ready, I'll use a clothespin or something to plug his nose. That way, I can sit back, take pictures, and watch him die instead of concentrating on my hands or the rope tight around his neck. That would also eliminate the rope burns on the neck. I can clearly see his face and eyes now. ...
I don't understand how such an evil, disgusting human being
two
can
kids.
Exist.
Kids. Like, I mean, reading this, I would like to do that to him.
Exactly.
But,
like, you know, like you said, we've gone back and forth on the whole death penalty thing. With pieces of shit like that, I wouldn't mind.
Fucking fry them.
Yeah.
And don't let them sit. And don't.
Mm-mm.
Well, you'll hear about this.
Yeah.
So a local hunter discovers Lee's body on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, Dodd basically just tries to keep a low profile because he's like, oh, I don't know, you know. And he continues journaling and basically spending all of his time working on his torture device. November 13th, 1989. Dodd attempts this. He just gets, every time it's like he gets more bold too, you know. Mm-hmm. November 13th, 1989, Dodd attempts to abduct a six-year-old by the name of James Kirk from a restroom of the New Liberty Theater in Comus, Washington. So he thinks he's going to go into the bathroom, this kid, and walk out without the kid screaming.
Yeah.
Well, obviously it doesn't,
that doesn't
go
work
as he figured it would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this boy, maybe he tried to tell him, oh, come with me and I'll do this. But this little boy, for whatever reason,
got scared.
And he starts fighting
Stranger
and
danger.
Screaming. Yes. Fighting and screaming and crying as Dodd is walking him through the, like, theater.
Like the lobby.
The lobby area. Mm-hmm. Will workers see him?
Well, yeah.
You know. So Dodd and the boy, he does make it outside with him, but he releases him then. And so Dodd takes off. The boy goes back into the theater. He was there with his mom's boyfriend. So theater employees tell his mom's boyfriend's name was William Ray Graves. And the theater employees tell him, you know, hey, he was almost abducted. So he goes outside in the direction that they last saw Dodd going to his car. Unfortunately for Dodd, his car broke down. Yes. Like, just a couple blocks away from the theater.
Good.
So, the mom's boyfriend, you know, starts, he's just walking in the direction that they told him that he was, you know, last seen. And he comes up on the description of the car that they described.
Mm-hmm.
So, he spots him, and he plays it smart. He offers to help him fix his car.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, you motherfucker, you know. So he takes a little bit of time and acts like he's trying to help him. Well, then he just fucking steamrolls him out of nowhere. and gets him in a headlock and basically subdues him and he takes him back to the theater where employees call the police. So, you know, Dodd, he's arrested finally.
Yeah.
And after 3 days of interrogation, he confesses to the other three murders. Just confesses. They didn't have any speculation of any of that. You know,
yeah, they had no idea. It was him, and he just broke.
Yep.
And told.
Yep. So he's charged with 3 counts of first degree aggravated murder and 1 count of attempted kidnapping from the little boy from the theater.
I mean, it still pisses me off of him, you know, him getting those children. It just, they
should have never been dead.
They should never have been in a position to be murdered, because he should have been behind bars when he first started.
And this is not just like, I mean, this is the whole justice system failing. Oh, not just one police officer or one police department. This is multiple 100% times over.
Yes.
You know?
I know.
It's just like, I just was scratching my head. I'm like, how does this happen? Imagine being the parents of those kids that died when all of this come out.
Oh, how he had been let go so many times for all the indecent exposure
and the molestation.
He admitted to molestation. Mm-hmm. I could not even. I'm not a parent, but I
would want to kill him myself.
But to find out that he had been let go by the cops so many times, I can't even begin to tell you how angry. And just, I don't even, I would just see red.
Yeah.
With anger.
I mean, I get angry, and it's not even my kid, you know?
Yeah.
He confessed, you know, he admits to those. Well, then initially he pleads not guilty, but then he changes his mind and he pleads guilty. During his trial, you know, the prosecution, they had his journals, his diary, all of his drawings, everything. Mm-hmm. They read from all those. And really, the defense didn't really even offer anything other than, well, yeah, he did it, but maybe he was crazy.
Yeah, because at this point, I mean, what defense could they have?
Right? What could they? I mean, there's not really much they could do. The prosecutors pushed for the death penalty, and the jury did agree to that.
Yeah.
Well, Dodd, as fucked up as he is, he requested to die by hanging.
Of course he did.
Because his last victim, he'd hung him in his closet.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1990, he was sentenced to death. 1990. He did no appeals. He did nothing to try to, you know,
to get out of doing
anything. Yep. So less than 4 years later, his execution would be carried out.
He's given the death penalty he wanted.
I know. I was surprised too.
Hell no.
And, you know, he told them, he said, you have to kill me, because if I ever do get out, I'll do it again. And I'll keep doing it until I'm dead. That's what he said at that time. Okay. He was executed on January the 5th, 1993 at 12:05. His last words. I was asked once by somebody, I don't remember who, if there was any way sex offenders could be stopped. I said no. I was wrong. I was wrong when I said there was no hope, no peace. There is hope. There is peace. I found them both in the Lord, Jesus Christ.
Oh, so look to the Lord
and you will find your peace.
So what? He supposedly is a born-again Christian?
Supposedly, yes. He's saying
he found God while he was in jail.
Don't
you just love how they are sitting behind bars and they find God, and all is supposed to be forgiven?
It's so fucking fake. And to me, he was right, because there is no cure for sex offenders, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care. It might not be politically correct, but that's my opinion. I don't think that they be rehabilitated.
No.
Cut their fucking dicks off, you know, whatever, but there is no changing that, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's a sickness that there is no cure for.
Right.
No amount of therapy.
No.
Drugs.
anything is going to
turn that around. Either.
I mean, even with serial killers, you know, yeah, some people who murder can be reformed. Yeah. But, you know, those serial murderers, no.
No.
They can't either.
I don't think so either. There's just something in them that just cannot be fixed,
exactly.
quote, unquote.
I mean, I always think, you know, when they talk about, some killers talk about, you know, like a voice or an entity of some sort that, you know, tells them what to do. It always makes me think of Dexter when he talked about his dark passenger.
Oh, yeah. That's real.
You know, he had a dark passenger that was with him that is the reason why he, you know, did what he did. They're just fucked up in
the head. So, side note that I also read today, his brother, remember, little Greg?
Yeah.
In 2016, he was charged with molesting a 13-year-old.
Well, that's running the family.
I'm like, that is... What are the odds?
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Something, I don't know. So that is Wesley Allen Dodd, the Vancouver child killer that most people probably have never heard of.
You know, I don't think he was one I was familiar with. I may have heard the name, but I didn't really know what he had done.
Well, he did a fucking lot.
Yeah,
he should have never done it all.
Piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So... I mean, I tried to keep it a little short just because there was so many of the accounts of the flashing his dick that I'm just like, we could have been here all night. And, you know, like, he just did it over the years. Never happened. Anything happened. Like I said, I think 120 days, which would be what, about 3 or 4? No, 6 months? No. How many months is that?
120?
Oh, so 4 months.
Four months.
Like, 4 months was basically the longest he spent.
In jail.
Mm-hmm. For any of those crimes. Yeah. Over 40 60. Accounts of lewd and whatever that word is. So, I don't know. So, we're not drinking again tonight, guys. Because, you know, if you listen to our last podcast, we just did that one. So, it's the same day. And I'm having surgery tomorrow on my fat thighs. So, so no alcohol for me.
Yeah.
And Heather's. Not partaking.
I'm being supportive.
A good friend, so.
And not drinking alcohol, but when we come back, we'll be back on our regular schedule of cocktails. And...
Yeah, I can't go 2 weeks after surgery without a drink. Sorry, Doctor. Sorry, Dr. Shantz, if you're listening. It'll be all right. I'll just have one glass of wine.
Just one.
Yes.
It'll be okay. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Who you got any ideas for the next one, Heather?
I don't.
Well, you got some time since, you know.
Yeah.
We did two today, so. Yeah.
So we'll see.
I just want to say, anybody, if you're out there listening, we're on Instagram.
And Twitter.
And Twitter. Heather takes care of both of those. I'm very technically challenged, so, like, I don't know how to do really a whole lot, especially with Twitter. And, you know, if you like, leave us a review on Apple. Or...
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, let your friends know about us.
Your
family. If they're into true crime, even if they're not, maybe they will be.
I told Heather, I was like, I need to get like a little like sign that says like, we'll send nudes for good reviews, but nobody would see it because we're on a podcast. So, but no, seriously, we would appreciate any feedback, good or bad.
Yes. You know, and with the, don't be mean. Don't be an ass.
Yeah, don't be a fucking dick. Okay. You can be like, look, I don't really like this.
Constructive criticism.
Because if you
like,
think
you know,
you're a dick, we can be a bigger dick.
Yeah. Yeah. So if there's something that you want to hear or something that we do that, you know, maybe you have a suggestion we do differently, then, you know, let us know. Just don't be a dick about it.
Yeah. Find us on Instagram. Send us a DM. No dick pics, though, please. Unless you're hot. I mean, you know, then you can just send those to the Bacon Bitch. That's my personal account on Instagram. So.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm checking out for a week or two. So while I recover from surgery.
Yeah.
So.
Then we'll be back to it.
I know. I hope you guys enjoyed listening about this fucking turd, Wesley Allen Dodd.
Yeah.
And I'm probably not going to do a whole lot of the child stuff just because it does.
It's
really bothered me.
It's a hard thing to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I just felt like I had to do this one just because of the gross negligence on the fucking police and the justice system. Uh-huh. It was just like flabbergasting.
And that's something, you know, there are cases that I have tucked away that I do want to talk about in the future of just, I mean, horrible police work or people who have been forced into false confessions.
Oh, yes.
That is just...
The West Memphis 3. That's one of probably, I think, my favorite crime stories. And when we do talk about the death penalty, that is like one of the things... Because, I mean, one of those was he was close to being executed.
Yeah.
So, you know, I see. But that's another story. We get on these tangents at the end. I'm sorry. That's just how we are. But.
Oh, well.
So we'll see you guys next time. I hope you enjoyed, and maybe I hope you had an extra cocktail for me.
Exactly, and me.
Yes. See you guys later.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.